It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone, one of our favorite people on the planet. You see him on the NFL Network. Previously on the Pac-12 Network, Mike Yam's kind enough to join us. Mike, how are you?
Hey, Mike.
Doing great, guys. I always appreciate the invite. Always good to be with you. I know it's been a minute, but it is definitely a busy time for sports fans, no question.
Yeah, no doubt. And you got to be loving life at the NFL Network because this is always my favorite week of the year for the NFL. I mean, we all love the Super Bowl, but not only do you have quantity in the divisional round, but you also have the quality to go along with it. There's some incredible matchups coming up this weekend.
Yeah, you know, and if you would have told me that my team in the Giants at the start of the season would be playing in a game this weekend, I would have been like, wishful thinking, didn't see it happen. So just another example of just the parity in this league, you know, three NFC East teams. I mean, that was probably the worst division in football a season ago. And the fact that there's been this type of turnaround, certainly remarkable. But you're right. I mean, the games across the board are certainly really interesting. And for as much as, you know, we could focus in on some of these matchups, you know, kind of a little bit of a buzzkill, you know, this time of the year at the end of the regular season, you know, coaches usually end up losing their jobs. And I know a bunch of teams have been making a lot of changes. So definitely a busy time.
Before we jump into these four divisional games coming up this weekend, I want to know the Mike Yam NFL MVP as of right now.
Wow. You know, for a good stretch of the season, and I think I'm still going to stick with it because I don't know if he did anything to make me change my view. And I feel like I'm in the minority on this one because most people, I think, would point to Patrick Mahomes. I think I'm still going to lead towards Jalen Hurts. And I know people said, hey, you know, missing those games at the end of the season, you know, you can't do that if you're an MVP. I look at where they were a year ago to get a one seed and the fact that they couldn't win games without him, because I think it's easy to point to that team's defense. I think they got like 23, 24 takeaways this season. I think that's like the fourth most top five team, whatever the exact number is. But I know they're in the top five in the takeaways. They got a bunch of dudes with 10 plus sacks. They get pressure on the quarterback. It, you know, all of those things, the A.J. Brown factor on the offensive side. To me, though, I've been more impressed with what I've seen from that team offensively. And I know there's an argument for Patrick Mahomes. And look, I wouldn't fight to the death on it and the fact that they've been able to produce at the rate at which they're producing, first in scoring in the NFL, top passing offense, and doing it with that 30, definitely deserves a ton of credit. But for me, just a slight nod toward Jalen Hurts.
Mm. You know, the interesting thing about him is that we saw him in college and thought, okay, you know, good college quarterback, but probably didn't end the way that he would have liked it to. But I never really anticipated him making that jump at the NFL level. Just how surprised are you with how he's been able to adapt and excel at this level?
I think every single year, and I'm actually getting ready for the draft as we're watching postseason games as well, I think every year we do our best job trying to use our eyes, lean on people who have done these evaluations, come up with comps, things that look similar, the measurables when it comes to that quarterback position. And I think every single year it is becoming increasingly more obvious that it is not an exact science. Case in point, and I don't disagree with you at all about Jalen Hurts. If you would have told me coming out of school that this could be a guy that was going to win MVP, I would have said, I don't know. But for as much as the draft's not an exact science, I think you can make the case that it's all about fit. These athletes are so good, and I'll give you a couple examples here, right? Like Tua, a year ago, think about how we viewed him. And there was a stretch this season where he was playing as good as any quarterback in the NFL with Mike McDaniel as his head coach. Maybe a better fit on that offensive side. Brock Purdy, another example. Think about all the teams that had an opportunity in this past draft to draft Brock Purdy. Now, if Purdy ends up, I'm making this up, the Atlanta Falcons, the Patriots, pick any team in the NFL. Does he have the same success that he's having right now with the Niners? Probably not when you consider who the guys call and plays in his head coach in Kyle Shanahan and some of the pieces that he has offensively with Brandon Ayuk and certainly Debo and Kittle and Christian McCaffrey and alike. I mean, that team's really good. He got the best left tackle in the NFL also on that offensive line. So a lot of it has to do with fit, and I just think that this offense and what Nick Sirianni's doing in Philly just fits Jalen Hurts' skill set.
All right, Mike, give me your probable Super Bowl winner and your dark horse Super Bowl winner.
I'll say probable the Niners. I think they are the most dominant team in terms of balance in the NFL. For as much as you can make about what that offense is doing, that defense is terrific. The defense is what's winning them a lot of these games, and I think that's what's going to make this matchup against Dallas really difficult. I know Dallas's offense looked pretty good last week against Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay's defense is not what the Niners are bringing to the table. So I would say favorite right now for me is San Francisco. Dark horse. I from an emotional standpoint, I'm pulling for Buffalo. But I got to be honest, man, like, Cincinnati scares the bejesus out of me. I think there's a world that exists, and I don't know if I'd go on record and pick them, but I definitely see a path where Joe Burrow and that team figures out a way to get a win. You know, the turnovers from Buffalo concern me a little bit from Josh Allen. I would say dark horse Cincinnati to get back to a Super Bowl and win it.
So I could see that because I think Kansas City is so hell-bent on fixing what happened last year against Kansas City and being so singular focused on Kansas City that Burrow and company is certainly more than capable of going in there and getting the W.
Yeah, and keep in mind, guys, right? Like, if that Week 17 game on Monday night happens and DeMar Hamlin is healthy and we don't have, you know, the scary situation that we witnessed, you know, I don't know if Kansas City a one seed now, maybe it's Buffalo probably. Right. And some things needed to happen from a Cincinnati perspective for them to get that one seed. You know, Kansas City's losses this year, I mean, an unexcusable one against the Colts, but the other ones are Cincinnati and Buffalo. So I don't know if I would point to the Chiefs as the dangerous team right now, despite the fact that they're the one seed. And that's why if you said to me, like, hey, you know, who else is in that mix? It's Cincinnati and Buffalo. And I just feel a smidge more confident in Cincinnati right now because of the lack of turnovers and just style of play. I mean, those weapons offensively are there, and I'm just concerned about Josh Allen turning the ball over.
So talking about your Giants, I actually have them as a dark horse, only because I think they've got one of the best running backs in the business. And if their defense can engage a little bit, it could be dangerous. And I don't know what that quarterback's potential is, but when he's committed to something, he takes a lot of big hits, Mike, but he is a football player when he is committed to it. You see your Giants doing anything past this next round?
Yeah, you know, I there's a fan in me that is loving what you're cooking up right now. And, you know, yesterday on the show, the guys were kind of giving it to me a little bit because they like the Eagles in that game. And I'm with you on the Daniel Jones thing. I'm certainly with you on the Saquon Barkley thing. And today we just finished up our production meeting for Total Access tonight. And Bucky Brooks is going to be one of our analysts. And he made me feel a whole lot better. He had talked about play calling from Brian Daboll, who, by the way, I think is on a short list for Coach of the Year honors. But he made a point that I hadn't necessarily thought about. He had said that the Giants are playing right now since week one playoff-style football. And it's because of how Daboll calls a game. And it's sort of like, hey, I'm gonna try to make some plays, keep this thing close. And as this thing gets to the fourth quarter, and they're on the road this week against Philadelphia, you know, the pressure continues to mount on the home team the closer it is in the fourth quarter. And then can you rely on your offense to just make one or two plays down the stretch to put you over the top? And, you know, Daniel Jones is coming off of his best game as a professional, you know, this past week against Minnesota. And from a running standpoint, you know, if there's one thing, that Eagles defense is really good, but they're 16th in the NFL in terms of rushing yards allowed. Like, you can run on them a little bit. You know, they get pressure on the quarterback and all of those types of things. But I do think there's something to be said for what the Giants are doing. I don't, you know, it's hard for me to separate because I am a fan and I'm super excited about what I saw against Minnesota, and I want them to beat a rival in Philadelphia. It's going to be a tough task for them because I do think the Eagles, top to bottom, are a better football team than the Giants are right now, but I do think there's a path for them to win.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I look at San Francisco, and I know you've got them listed as a potential dark horse, and they've got Dallas at home, and Dallas, you know, they usually find a way to screw things up in the playoffs. But look, I love the Brock Purdy story. I'm look forward to the Disney movie that's going to come out about him. I'm sure that's going to be all fun. But sooner or later, this is going to come to an end for Brock. And I think it's going to be this weekend. But do you have faith in the San Francisco team against Dallas at home in a divisional game?
I do, and I'm with you. And I know at some point that line of thinking is going to be right. Right? I mean, the guy's not going to win every single one of these games. Here's the only pushback, because I keep saying to myself, like, Mike, how can you pick a team to win the Super Bowl as your favorite, because they are my favorite, when they have a rookie quarterback who's played six games? Like, think about how unimaginable that would be if I told you that this was going to be the case. I would have said, no, like, they're not going to win a Super Bowl. Like, I'd be so concerned about that. The only pushback that I have is, I don't know how many other quarterbacks have ever been in this type of situation. I mean, think about how I laid it out. That defense is the best defense still remaining. They're the best defense in my mind in the NFL this year. And in the games where there were some struggles, I could point to the fact that they were the walking wounded for a good stretch of games towards that middle of the season. And Kansas City made them look pedestrian when they played earlier this season. I agree with those things. But right now, this team is dominant on the defensive side. There's no DBs in Tampa Bay. I got to tell you, San Francisco's got those guys. So I don't think Dallas can do what they did. I think it's going to take an out-of-body experience from Dak and CeeDee Lamb to carry that football team. They want to get after the quarterback. They can do that. So from a defensive standpoint, San Francisco is set up for success. And then offensively, the reads and the scheme that Kyle Shanahan's putting Brock Purdy, like, these are easy throws. They're not these moments where he is under constant duress in some of these games. And, you know, to use Debo and Christian McCaffrey in the backfield like he's got, I mean, Brandon Ayuk is their number one receiver in terms of yardage because there's so much attention on Kittle, who he's developed a great rapport with Debo when he's healthy on the field, and with Christian McCaffrey. Like, they got these interchangeable parts. I just think the game is simplified so dramatically for a rookie quarterback that he's set up for success.
What do you think of Tampa Bay firing their offensive coordinator, Byron Leftwich?
What a difference a year makes, right? I mean, think about, like, what was Byron Leftwich supposed to do this season? I mean, an offensive line that was completely banged up, relying on Tom Brady. What did he throw? I think he threw 66 passes in that loss against Dallas. You know why he threw 66 times? Because they couldn't run the football. Like, he was so limited in what he could do. Like, I'm not... I feel bad for him because I feel bad for anyone who loses their job. That's like not an easy deal, and I get it. You know, Leftwich made a ton of money as a player. He's going to find an opportunity. But at the end of last season, guys, we were talking about Byron Leftwich as a head coaching candidate, you know, going through that process, and I still think he's going to get an opportunity. But you know, a little bit of a rough day for me to see that type of news, knowing how limited that team truly was from an offensive standpoint, and that wasn't on him.
All right, so you can rank your favorites here. Sean Payton, in order of where he's at next year. Denver, Carolina, Houston, or back on TV?
So Houston, I would say, would be fourth on that list. Denver seems to make the most sense to me. At this point, I do think TV is in that conversation as well. I think when it comes to like Peyton and the opportunities that are there, look, there's a lot of money. He's making a lot of money. You're never wrong on television, so it's a good gig, and I get that. And there's more money to be had as an NFL head coach. But I would be looking at, you know, where are the best fits? Where are the best opportunities? How am I set up the most for success? Houston to me is an organization that's a revolving door at that head coaching spot. And I think there's some questions. I like Davis Mills, but you know, I think the reality is that that's still a franchise that's a long way from figuring it out. So I that would be last to me. And Denver, maybe he is the elixir for Russell Wilson. I'm not quite sold on that. I just don't know how good of a job that is currently. So I'll still put that as one, but I don't feel great about it. I think TV is a path, but the way people are talking about Sean Payton, I think he's going to be on the sideline.
How hard is that work week for a guy like that? Like you're in the business. What's the hour time commitment that a former coach that's being used as an analyst goes through?
You know, he's only doing, I haven't seen anything outside of the Sunday stuff, right?
Yeah.
Am I correct in saying that on Fox?
I think so, yeah.
I've only seen that. You know, I'm like, he's got a pretty, I mean, you guys know, like, we're all watching the games anyway.
Yeah, it's a good gig if you can get it. Yeah.
Yeah, it is, man. I mean, you know, I would imagine he's doing kind of like what we do on Sundays at NFL Network. Like, we're in a big room. It's pretty comfortable. There's usually food. And you're sitting there and you're watching every single game, and it's awesome. And you're intaking a lot of that stuff. I think our best analysts, and there's a few of them that we have, and we're pretty fortunate at NFL Network, that are going back and rewatching games and analyzing tape and looking for trends and that sort of thing. Like that's like a lot of real hard work. I don't know if Sean's doing that. I would imagine he's doing some of that stuff as they're picking up different things. But generally speaking, it's not even remotely close to the lift that it is for a head coach or even, you know, a coordinator at the NFL level. It's just a different grind. There's one guy in particular who I think is putting in hours every single day. Well, two people that I can think of right off the top of my head. One, Brian Baldinger. I mean, I've been with him a lot. Like, he is a film junkie. And Michael Robinson is, you know, a guy that I'm actually doing the show with later today. Those guys are meticulous in the film study. But I don't know if Sean has to do that right now for what he's being asked to do on Sundays.
Is Baldinger's fingers as jacked up as they see him on TV?
Way worse in person. You know, and it's awesome too, because I don't like to, you know, you don't want to be that dude that stares, right?
Yeah.
But like sometimes when we're doing the show together, I think he does it on purpose. Like he puts his hands up in the air when he's making a point. And I talk with my hands, so I can appreciate that too. But sometimes I'm watching him and I look at the monitor and like, I'm like, dude, Baldy, like that pinky doesn't even look like it's attached. Like it's like the wiggle and the wobble is so unnatural. And it's insane to me. It's like a rubber finger almost. It's, they're pretty jacked up.
It makes that, best, makes that 90 degree turn too. That just doesn't seem like that's possible.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and you guys know from my days at Pac-12 Network, I used to work with Ronnie Lott. Like that finger situation is a different entity entirely when you compare the two of those situations.
That's so that urban legend is true then with Ronnie Lott.
Are you kidding? Oh, hell yeah, it's true. It is 1,000%.
Wow.
True. Like a little mini stump that's there, yeah.
That's breaking news right there.
Ronnie's no joke, man. Ronnie is no joke. He will, Ronnie's also, he's like a sweetheart, but at the same time, man, like you can see that fire in that competitiveness that's there. It does not surprise me that actually happened, and he's got the missing sort of digit there to prove it.
Wow. Well, we got all kinds of great insight here. Mike, you're the best, man. We appreciate it. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Anytime, guys. I always appreciate the insight or the invite, and looking forward to doing it again.
Thanks,
you got
Mike.
It. That's Mike Yam from the NFL Network right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.